Okay. We're holding on Zion and Medvay's last line of the narrow lines. We started talking about yesterday the idea that if you hear a person saying Shem Shamayim Levatala, making Brachas Levatala, for example, or just in general using Hashem's name in an inappropriate way, then by rights you should be putting that person in Nidri, and if not, then you yourself should be in Nidri. We said the reason is because Hazkaras Shem Shamayim, where it's inappropriate, has very severe consequences. So, we got into this mainly because we'd been talking about Nidri, and we'd been talking about Nidri as it relates to our Mishnah, and this relates to that. Think about it, Amar Rav Abba, Hava Ka'im Nekameh Ravuna. One time I was standing as a Talmud in front of Ravuna, Shama Lahach Itza De'Apka Hazkaras Shei Hashem Levatala. He, Ravuna, heard a woman mentioning Hashem's name in vain. Shamta, he right away declared a shamta, an excommunication on her, the shuttle al altar ba'afa, and then immediately was matirit in her presence. So in one breath, more or less, he says to her, you're in shamta, and you're out of shamta. Shmamina plus, which means we can derive three dinim from that. Number one, Shmamina has karat Hashem pichaber etzarach l'nadari. So number one, as we said yesterday, that if you hear somebody inappropriately using Hashem's name, then you should put them in nidri. And number two, Shmamina nido b'fanav ein material la'el b'fanav. The other thing is another din that we said yesterday, that if you put somebody in shamta in their presence, and you have to be master in their presence as well. So therefore, Rav Huna couldn't say that you'll be in shamta and then she'll leave and have to find somebody else to be master it. You can't do that because since it was before now, then it would have to be, they'd have to be master it before now as well. And the third thing you can learn is that there does not have to be any time lapse between the nidui and the hatara. You can do the nidui and the hatara one after the other. They can be one after the other, because that's what we said, that's what we're going to do. And so, and like we said yesterday, the Rambam points out that this is the right thing to do anyway, because practically speaking, you have so many people who use Shem Shamayim Levatala inappropriately. If you were to put them in Nidri and then not be Matirit right away, you'd be just causing a Michshel. Other people are not going to know they're in Nidri. They themselves may not care very much. And therefore, you're going to, a Menuda is supposed to be, he's supposed to be acting like an Oval. Other people are supposed to stay away from him, etc. So if you don't, if you're not Matirit right away, then you're going to be causing a Michshel.
Okay, but if you right away, what are you...
Because what you've accomplished is you've showed the person what a serious thing it is. That for a moment there, you were in Nidri. For a moment there, you were excommunicated from the rest of the Jewish people. And therefore, that should hopefully make them sit up and take notice. Again, the Rambam says this is only if the person does it amazing, not for shogeg. In fact, there's a tshuva from the Rambam where he says that this is why you don't hear people doing this nowadays, because can you really tell whether somebody is doing it for shogeg or amazing? You know, one person can't see into the other one's heart. So therefore, there still is the idea. It's a very serious thing, but we don't have this idea of putting him in Nidri and being master.
Even if he says in English?
So that's, we talked about that yesterday. The machlokas among the Achronim, to what extent this applies to names of Hashem in other languages. Because I mentioned yesterday, the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch takes a very strong stand on it. He says that using the word God or God or what have you is indeed, Yonis and Ibishitz in one of his Sforim in Yaris Vash, goes even further. He says the fact that people toss around Hashem's name so carelessly, and he gives examples from various current languages. He says that's what causes the Golos to be so long. We said yesterday that any place where there's a Scottish Shem Shemayim inappropriately, there's Oni, there's poverty, and then that's unfortunately been the state of the Jewish people throughout much of Golos. So he says there's a connection over there, and there are other Achronim who will make on it. They argue. Well, I mean, the Gemara seems to be talking about physical, but I guess he means a little bit of both. But as I say, there are other Achronim who are more maker on it. You know, you shouldn't be doing it, but not necessarily would it be something that requires nidui to that extent. You could argue that that names of Hashem in other languages are no more than kinuyim. They're like the nicknames for Hashem that we find in Tanakh, like Chanun and Rachum and so forth. A person doesn't get punished for throwing around the word Chanun, even though it refers to Hashem. It's a nickname, so to speak. It's not one of Hashem's essential names. Similarly, with the names of Hashem in foreign languages, can be argued as the same kind of thing. And there are, actually, I mean, that gets into the question also. There's an interesting question. If a person is making a bracha in another language, what do you do with Hashem's name? So the old school Sidurim have it in a way that's completely non-halachic. They always translate, blessed are you Hashem. There's no question. Everybody holds, if you make a bracha, blessed are you Hashem, etc., you're not Yotze. the Tzilas Hashem English Siddur, they blessed are you Lord our God, etc. So there are poskim who hold that helps, but there are achronim who hold that even that doesn't help. The Mamloyas, for example, the Mamloyas was written in Ladino because that was the common language of the people of those times. When he translates brachas, he translates them each time using Hashem's name. Benedigo Su, which is the equivalent of Baruch Atta, Adnai, and then the rest of it continuing in Ladino. So he holds at least, and I guess as you remember, the Mishnah Lamelach probably held it that way also, that you actually have to use the actual name, Adnai, regardless of what language the rest of the Baruch is in. But yeah.
Otherwise you're not
Yosef. Yeah. Okay. Amar of Gidol Amar Rav. Tamid Chacham menadal atzmei or meifel atzmei. Tamid Chacham can declare a nidri on his own and he can be matir on his own. Question is pshita. Well, isn't that obvious?
But we said previously to anyone.
No, so when menadal atzmei, sorry, what we mean is he can put himself in nidri, he can put himself in nidri, and he can be matir himself.
We said yesterday a person can't
declare a neder of nidri on himself and have it work as a neder. But there is a concept of nidri, and a Talmud Chacham can indeed declare a nidri on himself for something that he did wrong, or something, or as we'll talk about in the Gemara.
So the neder of nidri and a nidri.
So the neder of nidri is you're saying that I'm making a nidri that I'm also to eat your food. That's not considered a neder. But regular nidri, that I'm under nidri and therefore I'm not allowed to be within your four amos, etc., that's different. As we said yesterday, that the Rambam holds that b'chlal, if a person says minudani loch, then it means he's also to be in that person's four amos. So a Talmud Chacham can declare a nidri on himself and he can be matir himself. So, okay, the Ram talks about over here, the Ram quotes from the Rashba, that there's two possibilities, he says. One is that the Rashba holds that we're not talking about if the Talmud Chacham did something that really, really deserves nidri. In that case, how can he master himself? So the Rashba holds, we're talking about, as we're going to say in a second, we have the case of Marzutra, who put himself in nidri sort of as a chumrah, as we'll talk about in a second. So then it's only a matter of a chumrah, so he can be master himself. On the other hand, the Ran goes on to say that no, the Rambam holds that the Rambam takes all Gemara at face value. That whatever reason he put himself in nidri for, whatever reason, he has the right to be master himself. Okay. What's an example? So the Gemara asks, isn't it obvious?
And if he passes away after maybe.
Well, then he has a problem. Okay.
Big problem.
Yeah. Okay. So Mao detainer, you might have thought ein chovash matir atzmei beis hasturin, the prisoner can't get himself out of jail. So if he's in nidri, how can he master himself? Kamash on this, that's the chiddush, that's not a problem. Hey chidami, so what's an example of a Talmud Chacham putting himself in nidri? Ki ha de mazutra chasidah. For example, you have the case of mazutra chasidah. Ki mechayev bave rab shamta. If he had to be mechayev a Talmud Chacham a nidri. And we learned in Moed Katan that actually the Chachamim usually would prefer not to have to do that. If there was a situation where Talmud Chacham had done an Avera, and they had a choice, do we put him in Nidui, or do we put him in Nidui Shamta, or whatever, or do we give him Malkus, they would say, you know what, better to give him Malkus rather than to put him in Shamta. So here, Mazutra, when he was faced with a situation where he has to put someone in, where he has to put a Talmud Chacham in Shamta, Mashmis Nafshe Bereisha, first he would put himself in Nidui, in Shamta. The Hadar Mashmis Babe Rav, then he would go and put the Babe Rav, the Talmud Chacham, in Shamta. And then when he got home, Shori Lenapshe, first he'd be Matir his own, the Hadar Shori Le, and then he'd be Matir the Nidri that he put on the Talmud Chacham. Now, why did he. He didn't do it before of. The Hadar Mashmis Babe Rav, then he did it before of. It could mean he did it. When we say that he put himself in Shamta and then the Talmud Chacham, doesn't mean it was in presence of the Talmud Chacham. He put the Talmud Chacham in Shamta, not necessarily in his presence. So therefore, when he gets home, he did it Shalai B'fanav, he can be master at Shalai B'fanav. Why B'chlal was he doing this? So the various Mepharshim give different reasons. The Ram says the reason is that he was doing it mishum midas chasidus, because of the honor of the Bavei Rav, HaYitochan, that I should have to put a Talmud Chacham in Shamta, so he put himself in Shamta as like a midas chasidus.
Yeah, but it doesn't answer his question.
Yeah, but that's the thing. It wasn't a real shanta, so to speak. Therefore, he could still... The Tosfos gives a different reason. That it's also, I mean, it's not like he himself really deserved shanta. He did it in order that he... The reason why he did it is because he has to remember afterwards to be master the nidri on the Barbei Rav, on the Tamil Chacham. How is he going to remember? What if later on he gets home and he forgets? So he puts himself in shanta first. That way, I'll be sure to remember later. I don't want to be in shanta myself. I don't want everybody to have to stay away from me. So therefore, I'll be sure to be master of mine. And once I'm master of mine, I'll remember to be master of his as well.
No, then I understand, but again, the question remains that how can you put someone else in the shanta when you're in shanta yourself?
Okay, but the fact of the matter is you can. That's what we're seeing over here.
From what?
But why not? I mean, the fact that you're in Nidri doesn't prevent, the fact that you're in Shanta doesn't prevent you from putting somebody else in Shanta. It just means everybody else has to stay away from you, and you have to prowl as if like an oval and so forth. It doesn't mean that you don't still have the power. I mean, even in Mod Cotton, we had various discussions what a Menuda is allowed to do. We discussed over there that a Menuda, whether a Menuda is allowed to learn Torah from his Rebbe, whether he's allowed to teach Torah to others, etc. No, it's not, you know, he's Menuda. He has certain rules, but it's not like he's completely cut off from everybody, and it's not like he's completely cut off from his powers that he had up until that point.
Including that.
One other thing Tosfos says, by the way, the reason why he put himself in Shamta is that he did it in order to prevent himself from having to be punished min hashamayim, because since we just said that really preferable thing to do to a Talmud Chacham is to give him malchus rather than shanta, so he was in a situation he has to give shanta, but in order to avoid an onish min hashamayim, he put himself in shanta first. Anyway, but then when he'd come home, he'd be matter his own, and then be matter the Talmud Chachams, which the Ran discusses the issue of, does that mean that if he wasn't matter his own, his Bnei Bayis wouldn't be allowed to be near him? The Ran discusses the pros and cons of that. Maybe not. I mean, on the one hand, it seems that he would. If he didn't, then they'd have to stay away from him. On the other hand, he quotes from the Raiva that maybe his wife doesn't have to. That his wife is to go for him, therefore she wouldn't have to be nidui in him. Okay. The Amar of Gidol Amar Rav. Since we mentioned one thing of Gidol Amar Rav, here's another one. Minayin shenishvoyin l'kayim es mitzvah. How do we know that a person can make a shvua to fulfill a mitzvah? Now, what is the Gemara asking? There's a few different ways that the Mefarshim have to explain the question. The Ran explains the question is, if then he ends up being over on that mitzvah, will he be chayav malchus for having been over on his shvua? Is it an effective shvua in that sense? The Rosh gives a different explanation. That the question is, how do we know l'chora it might be a problem of that you're going to be over on it? How do you know that you're allowed to make such a shavua and not have to worry about that? Then I might break my shavua and then I'm chayiv, and then I'm chayiv double. Another explanation that's given is that the Gemara is saying that it's not an issue of the Tosfos explains that it's also. The Gemara is also saying that it's not an issue of using Hashem's name for nothing. So anyway, how do we know that? Shenema, because the pasuk says in Tilim, Nishbati v'akayema, I made a shvua and I fulfill it. Lishma mishpatei tzedkecha, to fulfill your righteous mishpatim. So we see that David HaMelech would make a shvua to fulfill a mitzvah in order to strengthen himself in it. But once we see that David did it, we see that anybody can do it. We see according to any of the three possibilities. According to the Rosh's thing, we're not worried about Takala, that you might be over on it, and then you're in bigger trouble. And according to Tosfos, it's not a problem of using Hashem's name for it. And according to
David HaMelech.
But once it's fine for David, and then he wrote it in Tilim, then it's fine for everybody else too. No, but I mean, the point is that there's not different halachas for David than for everybody else. If we say that there's an inyan that you're allowed to make such a shavua, then fine, you're allowed to make such a shavua. We're not worried about these concerns. Shem Shemayim v'Latolah would be the same issue for David as it would be for anybody else. The idea of the rosh that you might fall through that you might fall through. If you're making a shavua in order to strengthen yourself, that'll strengthen you that you don't fall through. So the Ran's explanation of the question is, if you make such a shvua, how do we know that it's actually an effective shvua in the sense that if you are over on it, you're going to be chayav malchus? He says, by the way, that there's a difference. You'd be chayav malchus and you wouldn't be chayav a korban. You wouldn't be chayav a korban for shvua's bitri. But okay. Anyway, so since we see the Paul coins of the Ram, the point of the answer is, since we see that with the Governor Malchus is calling it an actual Shavuah, that means it has the force of an actual Shavuah. So yes, if the person is Ovan, he will be Chayav Malchus.
Was there anyone before that?
I mean, he's the one it says about. It says the Pasuk. Okay, the Gemara asks, V'alo Mushba V'omin B'hav Sinai Hu. What's the point of the Shavuah? Don't you already have a Shavuah to keep all of the mitzvahs already from Har Sinai? So again, according to all the various explanations of the original question, it's either you already have a Shavuah from Har Sinai, so ain't Shavuah chal al Shavuah, one Shavuah cannot be effective on top of another one. So what's the point of the Shavuah? No, what Rav Gidol is informing us, the Shari Lele Inish Lazaruzi Namshi. A person is allowed to make such a Shavuah in order to strengthen himself. If a person feels he's weak in a certain mitzvah, then yes, he should make a Shavuah in order to strengthen himself, in order to give him a greater Nesinas Koyach. The famous explanation of Chassidus on the Gemara that's quoted at the beginning of Tanya, Mashbiyah Noisi Tzadik Al Tirasha, that it's also Mashbiyah in Meloshim Soiva, that he's filled up with potential through it. So here also, a person makes a Shavuah, it's he's filling himself, he's filling up his gas tank for Ruchnius to strengthen himself. If somebody says, I'm going to wake up early in the morning and review this particular perek, or Eshna Masechta Zu, he says, I'm going to review this particular Masechta, that's effective. Neder Gadol Nadar L'Elokei Yisrael. By saying that, he's made a great neder to Hashem. Now, what do we mean? It's not the Rosh points out, it's not technically, on the face of it, how could it, all of them point out, how could it be a neder? We said the other day that a neder can't really be to do something. A neder can be to ask of yourself in something. A neder can't be to say that I'm going to do something. That's a shavuah. That's not a neder. So Tosfos says, okay, the chiddush is that he's saying that, as we talked about the other day, that yes, it can be a yad l'shavuah, just like there can be yodis for nedarim, so there are yodis for shavuah. If a person expresses a shavuah in the form of a neder, that's still valid. It's still, we still say that it's a valid neder. Yeah, it's a yad, it's a half a statement. The Rosh talks about differently that it's more like a neder of tzedakah, just like we said yesterday that you can make a neder of tzedakah and a tzchal. So this is also a form of a neder of tzedakah. What do we mean, by the way? What's the point of mentioning the K Yisrael? A couple of different explanations. The Marsha gives one. He says we know that a person should learn Torah l'shma. A person shouldn't be learning Torah in order that they'll call me a Talmud Chacham, in order that they'll call me Rebbe, etc. So what happens? The person makes this neder, or shavuah, whatever you want to call it, that I'm going to get up early in the morning and learn this perek or this mesecta or whatever. Maybe he's doing it not for the right reasons. Maybe he's doing it in order that people should think of him as a great Talmud Chacham. No, don't worry about that. Don't think of such a person that he has bad motives for it. He's doing it Leila Kei Yisrael. He's doing it L'shem Shemayim. Assume that. Okay, again, the question is, doesn't he already have Shavuah incumbent on him from Har Sinai to learn Torah? So again, the question is, what is his Shavuah adding? The eight Shavuah chal al Shavuah. One Shavuah is not effective on top of another one. The answer is, okay, so the Gemara continues with the question. My Kamash Malon. So what do you think? What is Rav Gidol maybe trying to tell us the Chiddush? That feel is the Ruzi Bahama, that you're allowed to make such a Shavuah again in order to encourage yourself, to strengthen yourself, so you'll actually go and do it. Fine, Hainu Dura Gidol Kamaisa. That's effectively saying the same thing as he said in his first thing about Nishba L'Kayim as a Mitzvah. What are you adding with this one? The answer is Hok Kamash Malon. No, the Chiddush in the second statement is like this. Kiven the boy Potter Nafshe B'Kriyash Mashachas V'Avis, because technically, he could be yotze the minimum of the minimum of Talmud Torah. You could be yotze by saying Kriyat Shema in the morning and in the evening. The Gemara explains in Menachos. Actually, it's the opinion. It's interesting. It's the opinion of Reb Shimon Ben Yochai. The Reb Shimon Ben Yochai, who Torah Yom Nasa, whose constant occupation is learning Torah. But he says there that for the Olam, the minimum you can be, as long as you say Kriyat Shema Shachar Shabbos, then you fulfill the bare minimum of Limud Torah, of Agisa Boyam Valayla, of delving into Torah day and night. So you could pocket yourself with that, but you're not. You're saying that I'm going to learn a certain perek or what have you. Therefore, Mishumachi Chayo Shavuah Aleh, therefore the Shavuah can be effective. The Ran explains that the point of this last discussion was like this. It's not really, the Ran explains like this. We're not really saying that a person to be Yotze if a person just says Kriya Shema, you can really just be yotze to the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. What it means is like this. When the Torah says, Vishinantam Ravanacha Vidibartabam, etc., and then in Yoshua you have the pasuk, L'yomer Shtefar Torah Zemekicha V'algisa V'yom V'alayla, what the pasuk is referring to, the bare minimum that the pasuk is referring to, is Kriya Shema Shachas Vavis. Yes, of course it means that you should be learning more than that, but literally, V'algisa V'yom V'alayla, you should be learning Torah day and night. That same Gemara in Menachos that talks about Kriya Shema Shachas Vavis mentions about there also that Rabbi Shmuel's nephew once asked him, am I allowed to learn Chochmas Yevonis? Am I allowed to learn Greek philosophy? And Rabbi Shmuel tells him, listen, if you can find the time that's neither day nor night, then give it a day. But you can't, because V'algisa V'yom V'alayla.
There's no between.
I mean, it's either, a time is either day or night. It's a suffix yom, suffix laila. So still, but it's one or the other. You still. And the point is, Rabbi Shmuel was saying there isn't really a time for it. The point is.
So
what do we say? I mean, if a person needs it for parnasa, that's different. A person needs to go to work. If part of their work involves chomus chotzonius, you know, the Alter Rebbe talks about it in Peretz HaTanya. You're fine. You use them as kaudim lachtuch behem. You use them as an axe, as a spade to dig with, to dig for your parnasa. Fine. You do what you got to do. But apparently this Ben Dama, Rabbi Shmuel's nephew, was asking him to learn it just as an interesting topic. Yeah. Anyway, the Ran explains the vort is like this. He says when we talk about the idea in shavur cholal shavur, and therefore, for example, that we're talking about that a shavur should not really be chal on a mitzvah. He says that only applies to something that explicitly says in Torah, something that you learn out from a diuk in the pasuk or whatever. That's not considered to be mushmav in the Har Sinai. Therefore, since the bare minimum that the Torah is talking about, Vishinantam Lona, Vidibartabam, etc., is talking about Kriyashma Shakas Vahavis, then that's the only thing. It's true, of course, you have to do more than that, Mitzad, Vagisaba, Yom Vavaila, but you still can't say, therefore, that a Shavuah cannot be Chal on that. A Shavuah can be Chal on anything, on any other learning that you do during the day. And therefore, when this person is saying, I'm going to learn a Perek or a Masech or whatever, then that Shavuah has a place to be Chal on. Not everybody agrees with that concept. One thing that some of the Mefarshim point out is that after all, yes, you have to learn Torah, but who says you have to learn that particular parak or that particular masechta? So if you're saying I'm going to, then fine, there's a place for that shvur to be chalam. You didn't necessarily have a chiyuv in the first place to learn that particular parak.
Not in vain, which is
right. Amar of Gidol Amar Rav, another din. Ha'omer l'chaveret nashkim v'nishne perek zeh. If somebody says to his friend, let's get up early and learn this perek. No, we're not talking about that. We're talking about that they both mutually agreed. But the person who first came up with the idea, olav l'hashkim, he has to get up first. He has to get there first. What do we see from that? Even though now in the previous two cases, there was a lashon of shvur of neder. Here there's nothing of that. Nevertheless, we're saying that because we're dealing with a divine mitzvah, therefore just saying it is enough. Just like we said yesterday, that just a declaration of tzedakah is enough.
But it's not a neder.
So we're saying we're not saying maybe that it has the force of a neder. It doesn't have the force of a neder necessarily, but he has an obligation to be the one to be there first. Okay, it could be la'ariv also. I mean,
if he doesn't, then nothing happens.
No, I mean, that's what we're saying. It's not considered an actual full-fledged neder, but it's Kabbalah to do a mitzvah. Shenema, as it says in the pasuk, Vayomer Eli, the Eibishter says to me, Yechezkel, Ben Adam, Kum Tzeel Abika, go out to the valley, V'shama Adaba Oisach, and I'll speak with you there, V'etzeel Abika, and I go out to the valley, V'hine Shem Kved Hashem Oimed, and there the Shechina is standing there. So you see, like the Eibishter, so to speak, invited him for a private session, and therefore he came there first. So therefore we see, when he's setting up a chabrusa or whatever, you have to be there first. They say on this, by the way, that on the other hand, what about when it's a, what, and maybe this is a little bit in my own self-interest, what about a Rebbe and Talmidim?
Yeah.
So there the answer is maybe not necessarily. We see the Eibishter is the Mokum Shatamotz, Gzulot, Shamatamotz, Anvas Nusa, that the Eibishter acts as the ultimate honor, and therefore he stands there and waits for Yechezkel. Mashemkin, in the normal case, not necessarily does the Rebbe have to be there before the Talmidim. Now, whether I should consider myself the Rebbe is a whole other question. Not really. We all learn from each other, but whatever. Maybe at least I can use that as an excuse for the fact that I'm not always, that I'm generally not here on time. Okay. Anyway. Amr of Yosef, going back to the topic of Nidui, Nidui b'chaloyim, if somebody was put into Nidui in a dream, then you need 10 people to be matter it. Normally a Nidui can be mutter, normally you can have one yachid mumcha, we'll talk about it on the days, or you can have three head yoytes. But here... No. What we say before Rosh Hashanah is Hataras Nidorim. Nidorim and Nidui are two different things. So there is. It's interesting. In the Alter Rebbe's original Siddur, after Hataras Nidorim, they also had something called Seder Nizifa, which is that the person who's being Matan Neder sits on the ground, and he and the other people go back and forth with the whole thing, saying that if I was put in Nizifa, which is a form of Nidui, by the Eibishter, then I want you to be Matan for me. And that's actually the reason the Alter Rebbe says that you need to have a minion. Technically, for our Torah Sanhedrin, you should only need three. Why do we have a minion? Because of that. So Lamaisa, later Rebbeim said that it's not our minhag to do the Seder Nezifa. Why not? Perhaps for the reason that the Gemara is going to say soon that it can't just be any old 10 people. Be that as it may. That because we're going to say if you have 10 people, I call that sort of shchina shavya. Every 10 people, the shchina. But we're saying you have to have a certain kind of 10 people. But whatever, the point is that so the Alter Rebbe originally had it in there, and you can find it in many sidurim. So we sort of have a vestige of that. We have the fact that we use a minion rather than the Olam uses three people for our Toras Nedarim, and the fact that if you look at the last paragraph, we say by Toras Nedarim that when everybody answers Hakuyum or Torim Loch, Hakum Cholim Loch, etc., what do we say over there? Enkan le Nidui vele Shamta vele Oru. What's Nidui Shamta and Oru doing in there? We're talking a Toras Nedarim because it's left over from when it was said at the end of the Seder Nezifa. But anyway, so here the vort is if the person was put into Nidui in a dream. Then it might be that it's a genuine dream. As Gemara is going to point out soon, dreams tend to have shtus in them, but still there is a core of them that might be valid, and therefore that might be true, and therefore it might really be that Minashamayim he was put in Nidui. Therefore you need 10. I call back sort of shchinta shavya. 10 people, you have the shchina with them. So therefore it's sort of you'd been out of matter. Wait, v'hu detonu hilchasa. This is only those 10 people have to be people who teach halachas. But if they learn Mishnayos v'leitonu, but they don't learn halachas, then it doesn't work. The Ran has a different gear over here. V'hu demasnu hilchasa, that if they teach halachas to others, then it's fine. But if it's only tonu, if only they themselves learn it, then if only they themselves learn it, but they don't teach it to others, then they're not good enough for this purpose. The Eleka, what if you don't have 10 people who teach halachas? Leis of a leis of a parshat drachim, then what the person should do is go sit by a crossroads where many people pass by. V'yahiv shlom al-beyud, he should go and say shalom aleichem to 10 people. Ad demikli le'asora d'gamri hilchasa, until there come to him 10 people who teach halachas. No. So one second. So there's two different explanations among the Mefarshim what this last line means. One second. The vort is like this. One way of looking at it is it means sit there and eventually you're going to be saying shalom aleichem to everybody. They're going to be saying aleichem shalom to you. Eventually, over time, it's bound to be that among the passers by there's going to be 10 people who teach halachas. That's one way of looking at it. The other way is what it means is by getting shalom aleichem from 10 even regular people, that'll at least protect you. That'll suspend the effects of the possible nidui min hashamayim until you're able to find 10 tamar chachamim, 10 people who teach halachos to actually go and do a proper hatorah, of the nidui in front of them. Hello. So those are the two ways of looking at it. The Rambam, by the way, has a different girsa, apparently, because he goes on to say that you need 10 people who learn Gemara. If you can't find them, then 10 people who teach Mishnah. If you can't find them, then even 10 people who do Chumash is good enough. And he goes on like that. But anyway, going... That's how the Rambam says it. I don't remember whether it's brought that way in Shulchan Aruch. But this is what I was saying a minute ago. Maybe the reason why the Alter Rebbe even though the Alter Rebbe included the Seder Nezifa, why we don't say it, because it's not necessarily. You know, are the 10 people that you have there in Shul on Erev Rosh Hashanah with you, are they necessarily the people who teach halacha or Mishnah or what have you? Lav Davka. So therefore, so it may not be effective anyway, and therefore they took it out. Okay. Amalei Ravina L'Ravashi. What happened? Yoda Man Shamte. What if he knows who put him in Nidui in the dream, in a Shanta in the dream, Maudalishule, can he go to that person and have him be Mapineta? So a person dreams that Reb so-and-so, not just that a generic thing that he heard a voice saying you're in Nidui, but he actually saw in his dream that so-and-so, so can he go to that person when he's awake and be Mapter it? Amalei, so he says no. L'shamusi shav yishliach. It could be that min hashamayim that person was made a shliach to put him in shanta. L'mishrile lo shav yishliach. But it could be that as far as being matter him, maybe he wasn't empowered min hashamayim to do that. So you still need the 10 people.
So we said previously anyone who may.
If it's in real life, if in waking, if that's the difference. In waking life, if Reuben puts Shimon in Cherem, fine, you can go to Reuben afterwards and have him be matter it for you. Reuben was not necessarily doing it on a shlichus from Min HaShemayim. Mashen can hear, where in your dream you saw that Reuben did it, he may have been doing it on a shlichus from Min HaShemayim. But not necessarily does he have the empowerment Min HaShemayim to be matter it. Therefore you need the 10, Tamid HaChachamim. Okay, Amalei Rav Acha L'Rav Ashi. How about Shamta? That's what we were saying, that the dreams do mean something. There is actually a considerable discussion about the extent to which dreams, there's various Gemaras that bear on this. On the one hand, Chalom Shavi Daberu, on the other hand, Bachaloi Madaber, the Gemara points out that contradiction in Barachas. So every dream, even the story of Yosef, we see that every dream, as the Gemara is going to say in a second, every dream has a little nonsense in it. By Yosef, you have the fact that it says his mother was going to bow and his mother already passed away. There is all that. And the Gemara mentions, there's various places where the Gemara mentions that dreams have no standing in halacha. For example, there's a Gemara in Sanhedrin that talks about a person has a dream where he's told that certain money that's in his house, let's say, is Moris Maisa Sheni. He doesn't have to worry about that. The dream is considered Dvarim B'Teilim. But on the other hand, sometimes we do find that dreams have a certain significance in halacha. And there's a number of cases pro and con in the Rishonim about using dreams to decide or clarify things in halacha. There's an entire sefer called Shailos HaTrobos Min HaShemayim from one of the Balei HaTosfos where he would write out questions in halacha that he had. He'd put them under his pillow, and the next morning he'd find an answer written out Min HaShemayim. He collected all these into a sefer. And that sefer is quoted in some context in halacha, although on the other hand, there are some Rishonim who say, how you talking? Dreams have no validity in halacha. There's other things like that also. There's a story with one of Balei HaTosfos, I don't remember now which one, Rabbeinu Ephraim, maybe that he was master of a certain kind of fish. And he was shown in a dream that you're being master shrotzim. And so he went and undid it. There's a lot of give and take, and a lot of ink has been spilled on this topic of dreams and halacha. Okay. What if the person was put in Shamta in his dream and he also saw in his dream that they were master it? Does he still need the 10 people? Amalei says, look, shame she yep shalabai tevin. As we just said, just like you can't have grain without straw, without in it. Kathy yep shalachalim below dvarim b'talim. So also you can't have a dream without some dvarim b'talim. So therefore, it could be that the nidri is genuine and the hatara is not. Therefore, yes, you need the 10 people just to be on the safe side.
The other way around.
But you have to be machmer on it because it's a potential nidri min hashamayim. The expression of bar and tevin, by the way, all the mepharshim point out over here, the comes from a pasuk in Yirmiyah where the Eibishter sends Yirmiyah with a nevuah criticizing the false neviim of his time that the haitochim they're mixing the nonsense of their dreams and claiming that those are real nevuahs. How are you thinking to compare the bar with the tevin, the genuine wheat, meaning the genuine nevuah of a navi, with the falsehoods of these of their false Nevi'im. But we see from that that dreams tend to be intermixed. That even a genuine dream, unless it's real Nevuah, has some tevin in it.
So you have to make a
so you have to make a Taras Nidonim with 10 people. That's Taras Nidonim with 10 people, yeah.
Any dream?
Not any dream. A dream where a person was put in Nidri, where a person was put in Chayrim in his dream.
So we're talking about the dream?
We're talking about a person who was put in Nidri in his dream. That's what we're talking about.
That's the Kimetzvah.
Yeah. The Ran, by the way, asks an interesting... The Ran discusses a question. So what happens until this person finds the 10 people? Does he have to act according to the dinim of a person, of a Menuda? Again, we learned in Moed Katan the various things. He has to act like an oval. There's the different possibilities, whether he's allowed, which things of Avelus does he have to keep, which does he not? People have to keep Fuamas away from him, etc. Does all that apply in this case, where he was put in Nidri in his dream?
Does it?
So the Ram says that no. So as far as that, he says it's Sorech Iyun. He says, I'm not sure. Then he asks a related question. What if somebody sees in his dream that he made a neder? Does he have to keep that neder? So the Ram says, no, that not. Well, that's what he argues, that nidri, as you could say, it was min hashamayim. A neder has to be your own volitional thing. But he quotes from the Rashba who says that not. He quotes from the Rashba that one time someone came to him about a neder that he had made in his dream, and the Rashba made him do a Taras Nidonim on it.
Let's say something else. What's going to somebody make
nether
to give
Zaka? So then he has to give
Zaka. If he not gives,
then he's over on that nether.
Huh?
Then he's over on it. Then he's violated his nether. He's over on by Yaakov Torek.
The breach will appear, huh?
Maybe you can be master. Maybe you can be master. I'm not sure.
Somebody promised.
Okay, now we're not dealing so much with practical halacha. Practical halacha is other shiurim.
Okay.
That's it. Let's continue. Murtel. Ravina Havel and Nidrul Advei. So Ravina had one time his wife had made a neder, and they needed to be master neder. Now, a husband is able to cancel his wife's neder, and we've talked about before, and we'll talk about much later in the Masechta. Why wasn't he just master his wife's neder? So either Tosfos or the Ran said that he had already been Makayim the neder. The din is that if the husband is not made for the neder within that same day, or if he's Mekayim it, if he says, you know what, I agree with your neder, then he can't cancel it afterwards. So this may have been that. Or it may not have been a neder, the kind of neder that the husband can be made for. It's not a neder of Inri Nefesh or Dvarim Shebeinu Lebeinu. If she makes a neder, if it's a neder of Inri Nefesh, that she's denying herself something, or it's a neder Beinu Lebeinu, that's a neder that affects their marital relationship, then he can be made for it. But if it's some other neder, let's say, for example, she made a neder to learn a certain thing or to give tzedakah or what have you, the husband doesn't have any rights over those neder. Yeah, it's not Beinu Lebeinu, yeah. Anyway, it's not Beinu Lebeinu. Beinu Lebeinu he can be made for. This one wasn't.
Then
no Lebeinu. That's what I said. Yeah.
But this is Beinu Lebeinu.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So anyway, so his wife had a neder, so he needs to be matir neder. Also, l'chamer de Ravashi, so Ravina came to Ravashi to ask, Amale baal maoshi also shliach l'charotas ishtei. Can a husband be a shliach for his wife's charota? Meaning, instead of my wife coming to the chacham or to the beis din herself, can she send me on her behalf? Amale, so Ravashi tells him it depends. Im chansin ein, iloi loi. If they're already gathered together, the three people, then fine. You can be her shliach. If not, then not. Now, why is that? So first of all, what do we mean b'chlal when we ask about a husband being a shliach for his wife's karata? So the Ran quotes over here that there's two different opinions among the Rishonim to understand the Gemara's question. One way of looking at it is, the Rambam's way of looking at it is, that the question is only about a husband and wife. Because ishtei kegufoi, therefore maybe there's a reason to think that you can send your spouse as a shliach. But if it was just two other people, then for sure you couldn't. There's no question about that. That's one way. The Rambam says that. Tosfos says, the Ran quotes, Tosfos says the other way around. No, if anything, it's the other way around. A regular person, sure, you can send a shliach to be matir neder. You tell him the fact, look, you know, I regret my neder, as we're going to learn later on in the third parak, the mechanics of it. I regret my neder on the basis of such and such, and I needed to be matir it. In the case of a husband and wife, though, there are various concerns. What are the concerns? On the one hand, so the one thing is that One thing is, Tosfos says that he may forget details of what the wife said for her charata. and therefore he may add his own things, and that wouldn't work. It has to be based on her charata, not on his. The Rosh says a little bit differently, not in a matter of he might forget, but because he doesn't like the fact that his wife has this neder and he's not able to cancel it, he may go deliberately or not deliberately, whatever it is, and actually add to what she said. Whatever it is, it sort of amounts to the same thing. But the point is that therefore, so maybe on the contrary, then Tosfos is saying, the Rambam says that when it comes to two other people, no question, you can appoint a shliach, but a husband and wife, maybe because they're, maybe for these reasons, maybe you shouldn't be able to. Maybe she has to appear in front of the Beis Din herself. So what Ravashi is saying is that if the Beis Din is already gathered together, then it's fine, but if not, then not. So what's the reason? So if we say that the idea is, because the husband may add things to what the wife said, the idea is, in the whole hassle of trying to gather together a Beis Din, then that may cause even more that he forgets the details of what she told him, and he ends up adding his own details.
And therefore he can't.
So if he already finds them gathered together, then fine. But if not, then not.
It's easier for him once they get.
Yeah. The Rosh gives a different reason. The Rosh in his Pesachim, in his Shuvos, whatever, gives a different reason that's brought in the Torah. The reason is, why b'chlal would a wife send her husband to be matir neder for her instead of just coming herself? Because she's embarrassed. She doesn't want to have to come in front of Beis Din. Well, if the three people have to be gathered together, you have to go start asking people, can you join together for Asharas HaDodim? Then already you're publicizing the thing, and anyway, it defeats the purpose. Then in that case, that the wife is embarrassed too, that now it becomes more public knowledge. So therefore, not necessarily did she empower him to do that in the first place. Because if she's trying to avoid the embarrassment, if he has to now go gather together the people in order to seat them as a Beis Din, then already it's becoming public knowledge anyway, and not necessarily did she give him the rights to do that. Not necessarily. Would she have given him the power to be her shliach if she knew that it's going to involve all of that? If she tells him, I don't care if it involves gathering together people, then fine. They also, by the way, get into the question of here of whether even if we're saying the husband can't be made for his wife's neder, can he be a member of this Beis Din of three? One way of looking at it is maybe yes. If he's together, fine. He can't be mapped to his own wife's neder, but he can join together with two other dayanim over here. But the Ran says yes. There are other Rishonim who say no, and in fact, in Shulchan Aruch Paskin that he can't. It doesn't matter, Negeba Dover. There's no problem with her with a dying as being Matin Neder being Negeba Dover. Because what it is is actually there's a Mishnah in Masechet Negayim that mentions that a relative is not a Machlokes Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim, whether a Kohen who's somebody's relative can see that person's Negayim. Rabbi Yehuda holds no. In fact, that's relevant at the end of this week's parasha when Miriam has Tzaraas and Aaron says who's gonna be able to check her out and declare her Tahor, I'm her relative, and there's no other Kohenim in the world. That's based on Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. Rabbi Yehuda also says over there that a relative can't be matir his relative's nedarim. It's a machlokas rishonim whether the halacha is like the Chachamim or Rabbi Yehuda. So if you say the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, then the husband can't be on the basin. Yeah. Okay. So the Gemara says Shema Minah. So that's a different opinion among the rishonim. And Shulchan Aruch says according to the opinion. Well, meaning in Shulchan Aruch says the husband should not be on the basin to be matir his wife's neder. Shema mina plas. Okay, so we can learn three dinim from this little story. Shema mina baal masa shliach lacharata. Story number one, we can learn that a husband can be a shliach for his wife's charata. Again, according to the Rambam, only a husband and wife, but not anybody else. According to Tosfos, even a husband and wife, halach is kama v'kama anybody else. Number two, we learn that lo shari or lo yoli, it says that either way, you're not supposed to be matir neder where your Rebbe is, because here we see Ravina wasn't just matir it himself, he went to Ravashi. And number three, we see that if the Beis Din is gathered together, then yes, the husband can be a shliach for his wife's neder. And the Gemara finishes off.
We
know that now from this story. Before the story, we didn't know that. So now we know two things, that the husband can be a shliach for his wife's charata, but only if the Beis Din is already gathered together. He can't gather them for the various reasons we talked about. And the Gemara finishes off, by the way, v'shamta afilu ba'aster the rabbi. When it comes to be matir a shamta, a nidui, that you can do even in your even in the place where your rebbe lives, because it's not right to leave the person in shamta for the length of time that's going to take. And also one more thing, a yachid mumcha can release a shanta. What do we mean by yachid mumcha? The Ran discusses over here, are we talking about somebody who actually has smicha, the original kind of smicha, ish mepi ish moshe rabbeinu, or do we just mean somebody who's expert in the halachas? Lemaisa, already from the time of the Rishonim, we say that we don't really have any kind of mumcha like that among us nowadays, and therefore you're never matir neder with a yachid mumcha. You always get together a base in the three.
They have to be present.
Well, of course they have to be present, yeah. Actually, that's true. Actually, the Ran quotes from Rabbeinu Shimshon that a person can send a letter of charotah to Beis Din, and they can be mapped in there, right? Okay, but the Beis Din needs to be present anyway, yeah. What's the relevance of all of this to our Gemara over here? On the face of it, we were talking before about Nidui, why are we suddenly jumping into a Neder? So Tosfos quotes the Rashbam, who says that actually he has a different girsa. He says that actually the situation is not that Ravina's wife had a Neder, it's that she had a Nidui. The situation that we just talked about, she dreamed that she had a dream that somebody put her in Nidui, and therefore we needed to gather together, and therefore that led into the whole discussion.
So it's Nidui.
So it would be Nidui, according to that, not Neder. Okay, getting back to the topic we started on that on Zion Amud Beis, the idea about being careful about the use of Hashem's name, a little bit of Agapta. Amud of Shimon bar Zvid, Amud of Yitzchak bar Tavla, Amud of Chia Aricha, Amud of Chia Aricha Dveir of Acha, Amud of Zera, Amud of Loza, Amud of Chanin, Amud of Yashia, Mishmed of Yehuda bar Iloy. I think that might be the longest chain of transmission in all of Shas. My dichtiv, what does it mean? It says in the pasuk, "V'zorcha lachem yirei shmi." They'll shine for you those who fear my name. The pasuk continues, "Shemesh tzedak of a gomer." They'll shine. It's a pasuk in Malachi, it's an after of Shabbos Hagadol. They'll shine for you a sun of tzedakah with healing in its wings. So what does that mean? What's the yirei shmi? What are the people who fear my name? This refers to people who are afraid to use Hashem's name in vain. The question is, Mefarshim asks, what's the chiddush? I mean, if it's an actual issur to do that, then so they're afraid of it. Wonderful. So they're being careful of a mitzvah. What's the special reward for them? So one explanation they say is, we're going to learn later on in a few days that we talked about this briefly the other day. The usual way when a person declares a korban would be to say korban l'Hashem. Person could flip it around and say Lashem Kargan, but it's better not to do that, because what happens, he says Lashem and then dies, and now he said Hashem's name in vain. The Yirei Shmi are the people who are careful about that kind of thing. They will never use the expression Lashem Kargan, just to be on the safe side.
Or
with Kargan Lashem. So they're always careful to not be in a situation where they might accidentally use Hashem's name in vain. And so the Pasuk says the reward will be Shemesh Tzedakah U'Marpeh, a son of Tzedakah and of healing. So we see that the sun is associated with healing. Amar Abai, Shema Mina, Chiyuk Adiyayim and Masi. We see from that that the Chiyuga of the day is a healing thing. What's Chiyuga? Rashi, the Mefarish over here, says two possibilities. One is that Chiyuga means the rays of the sun. The other is based on a Gemara that we learned in Yuma that said that the chiyuga is when you have bright sunlight coming in through a window, you see dust in the air. The Gemara explains in Yuma over there that actually what it is the sun figuratively soars through the heavens, like the sun as it's moving through the heavens is like soaring through them. So you have sawdust. That sawdust is what you're seeing in the air over there.
Or it can mean literally.
So that's the thing. Either it means so chiyuga either means the sun's rays, or it means the dust from the sun soaring through the sky. And the Marsha says according to that what's the word? What's so special about that? So he says an interesting idea. The Pnimius in Yonim, I guess, the sun is not, where do we get the heat of the sun? We get it basically from this friction of the fact that it's soaring through over there. So therefore, it's like the sun, so to speak, has no koyach of its own. It has koyach only from the fact of its movement. So therefore, that relates to this idea. Therefore, people who are careful with the name of Hashem, they understand the deeper. They understand the deeper what's going on behind the scenes. So let me see. I'll tell you exactly what he says. Let's see. So. Okay, so the vort is therefore that the Maharsha is saying. So what is it about the sun that makes it able to heal? What is it about the sun that's a healing thing? The heat of it, and where did the heat come from? From its motion, which produces the sawdust. Therefore, that's the connection, and that's why we're mentioning the point of that sawdust. That's the Gemara explains over there, like in Yuma, like the sun sort of soars through the sky as it's moving along. Like in Gemara terminology that I'm also right this way, the heaven, the space is not empty space. It's made up of a bunch of galgalim, one within the other, like layers of an onion. So like the sun has to like carve its way through them as it's going around. I mean, you could also say maybe in terms of modern physics, maybe the chiyug of the yema is the various particles that come out of the sun, so the cosmic rays, solar wind, vase. Anyway, whatever. Okay. So those are healing things. So when we say shemesh zako marte, that's the idea. The reward for the yirei shmi is that they benefit from the healing that the Eibishter provides through the sun.
But everybody benefits. The non yirei shmi.
But we're saying they get a special. They get a special thing. Upliga the Reb Shimon ben Lakish. However, this explanation disagrees with Reb Shimon ben Lakish's explanation of the pasuk. Because he says the shemesh that we're talking about in the pasuk over here is not the sun that we see nowadays in the sky. Rather, he says it's talking about something that's going to go on la'asid lava in Mashiach times. So therefore, so that's the contradiction. What did he say? Okay, in Haggadah, sure, it can mean both, but at least as far as we are so far, this statement over here with the long chain of Tanoim and Amiroim disagrees with Shimon ben Lakish's explanation. Okay, it's Haggadah. You can elevate the Jubei Elikim Chaim, but yeah, okay. He says, in the future world of Mashiach time, there won't be Gehenim. The Eibishter will take the sun out of its shield, very, very relevant to Tanya these days. The tzaddikim will be healed by it. So on a simple level, it means that the sun has a shield around it that protects us from the effects of it. Otherwise we'd burn up. So loss of lava, we'll be able to tolerate that. The Eibishter will give the tzaddikim the kayak to tolerate it. Beruchnius, it means, and this is why I mentioned what it's talking about in Tanya, is the idea the Alpha Rebbe has been talking about in Shaiyuch and Ramunah in Tanya these days, that the sun, that the Shema Vaya, the marshal for Shema Vaya is the sun, the marshal for Shema Lakim, which screens us from the full intensity of Shema Vaya, is this shield around the sun. So loss of lava, the sheath will be taken off, we'll have a full intensity of Shema Vaya. There won't be Elokus won't be hidden from us anymore like it is now. So tzaddikim misrapin, the tzaddikim will be healed by it because for them this full revelation of Elokus will be a healing thing. Or Rishayim nidonin bar, and the Rishayim will be punished in it with it because their gashmius, their chumrius will be burnt off by it. Shenema, the pasuk says, "V'zorcha lachem yirish mi shemesh." It says that they'll shine for you those who fear my name, a son of healing, etc. V'loyoy delav shemis adinbar. Not only that, the tzaddikim won't just be healed by it; they'll enjoy it. Shenema, the pasuk finishes off, "V'yitzasim u'pishtim ke'egle marvik." You'll go out and you'll pasture like fatted calves, like young cows that have been raised and fattened up, and now all of a sudden you let them out of the pen and they can go run around in the field and eat to their heart's content. That's the mushal of how the tzaddikim are going to enjoy the elokus in the world. The Rishayim will be judged with it. Shenema, as the pasuk continues, behold, there comes a day burning like an oven. And as the pasuk continues, it says on the bottom over here that the pasuk continues that all the wicked will be burnt up by it like straw. Like straw. Again, it's the idea of Chassidus that when there's no tzimtzum, when Elokus is not screened off from us by the various tzimtzumim, then anything that's not bottled to Elokus can't exist anymore. And therefore, so the Rishayim, whose Yeshus is all non-Elokus, and that gets burnt off, and all that's left is the inner tzaddik within the person.
Meaning the Jewish people? Meaning every
we talked about this the other day. Lo yudach menemni. Every yid has a nefesh alakis in him. The nefesh alakis ultimately is going to be able to enjoy the zivashchina. It may need many, many layers of chumrius and gashmius burned off at first. That's the function over here. But eventually, yeah.